in ancient India, the culture was that in the day everyone would be out there working, doing different things. But in the evening they would all come together like this. And India, in the original language, is known as Bharat. Isn't it? You heard the word Bharat, isn't it? Like Maha Bharat. Yud Maha Bharat. Isn't it? Like the program. So, Bha means Bhav. You understand? Bhav means emotion. Ra means Rag, which means melody. And Ta means Tal, which means beat. So Bharat, it has many meanings, but one of the meanings of Bharat is the land where the deepest expressions of emotions of the heart are expressed through music and beats. And therefore Bharat is the place of music, it's the place of beats, it's the place of melody. It's the place where people would come together in the evenings and forget about all the things going on here and all the problems and the arguments. And they would, through this ancient system of music, dance and discussion and wisdom, they would elevate their minds and hearts to another place. And so today we're having a glimpse of that. For these moments that we're here, we try to forget about everything out there. Don't worry, you can forget about it for a few hours. It will be waiting for you after that anyway. But for these moments, we try to forget that and we try to elevate our consciousness. And they used to tell a lot of stories in the evenings when they used to come together like this. So let me maybe today tell you a story. There was a great king and his name was Bhartrahari. Bhartrahari was a great king. In ancient times, kings were not just kings. Kings means in Sanskrit we say Raja, isn't it? King means Raja. But they were just not kings, they were Raja Rishis. You see, Rishi? Rishi means one who is a great thinker. So the kings were also great thinkers, not like the politicians of today, but we won't go there today. So Bhartrahari, throughout his life, he was not just the king who had many responsibilities, but he wrote many, many beautiful things as well. And in his life, he wrote three works called Satakams. Satakams means like a poem of 100 verses. 100 verses of poetry. So he wrote three famous Satakams in his life. The first one was known as Niti Shatakam, which means the 100 verses of logic. The second Satakam he wrote was known as Shringara Satakam, which means the 100 verses of beauty. And the third Satakam he wrote was known as Vairagya Satakam, which means the 100 verses of detachment. Do you want to know the story of how these three came about and how they're all linked? I'll share that story with you today. He was a king, he was in his palace, he had everything. He had all the wealth and prosperity and opulence that anyone could desire in their life. And he also had a wonderful partner. He also had many servants and others. But he was particularly attracted to his wife. His wife's name was Pingala. So he was with her his whole life. And he had a very happy life. He had everything anyone could ever want. And not just that, he was also a deep thinker. So as he was ruling and seeing so many things in the world, he was also learning, how do I engage with the world? How do I engage with other people? How do I navigate my journey in this world in a smart way? And therefore, the first thing he wrote was known as Niti Satakam, He wrote 100 verses of logic, smart thinking, how to live in this world, what you'd call in the modern world, life hacks. Basically, how to live in a good way in this world. So that was nice. And so he wrote this, everyone was very pleased with it. As he spent more and more time with his wife, his partner, he was falling more and more in love with her. He was becoming more and more enamored by her beauty. He was finding himself more and more drawn towards her and drawn away from everything else in the world. And as he looked his wife in the eyes and felt so much love in his heart, you know, he said his heart would skip a beat when he saw her. And so becoming overwhelmed with attraction towards his wife, he wrote his second satakam, which was known as Sringara Satakam, 100 verses of beauty. And her eyes are like lotus petals, and when she walks, it seems as though she does not touch the earth, but she is floating. And when she speaks, her words are like the fifth note on the flute. And, I mean, he did it better than me, but you can see where I'm coming from. Kind of like Shakespeare and Romeo and Juliet and other such things. So he wrote this beautiful 100 verses glorifying the beauty of his queen. One day a Brahmin means like a saintly person, came to the king and said, "You've been ruling so well, you've been taking care of everything so nicely, I have something for you." And he gave the king a fruit. Think like, is that it? A fruit? Is that what I get for all of my efforts? A fruit. He said, no, you please take this fruit. He said, okay, I'll take it, you're a saintly person. And the saintly person said, this is no ordinary fruit. You take this fruit, whoever you give it to will have immortality, they'll live forever. Now, if you're in love with someone, the greatest fear you have in your heart is that one day you may lose them, isn't it? That your heart may get broken. Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, and the very next day, you threw it away, and all such songs. So he was thinking, I have this fruit. Now there's two options. Either I can take it, or I can give it to Pingala. If I take it, I'll be immortal. Wow, that's amazing. But she won't be immortal. And therefore, one day in my life, I will have to experience her death. I will not be able to live through it. So what did he decide to do? He took that fruit, no ordinary fruit, a fruit which gives immortality. And who did he give it to? Pingala. So he gave it to Pingala. He said, I have something for you. And he gave her a fruit. She's like, it's a fruit, you know? I was expecting some diamonds or, you know, like, no, it's no ordinary fruit. It's a fruit which gives immortality. Wow, immortality. Amazing. How kind you are. Pingala walked away. And now she was thinking, this fruit I have, what should I do with this fruit? Now every day Pingala was going out in a chariot into the forest for her own adventures. The king was busy, he had so many other things to do, so she would go into the forest. Now every day Pingala was going out into the forest, for who was she being driven by? A charioteer. And the charioteer was strong, chivalrous, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger type of person. And over the months and years, she had become attracted to him. So the king was in love with Pingala, but Pingala was in love with the charioteer. So now she had this fruit, and she thought, what shall I do? Shall I take it? No, but there's this person who I'm so attracted to, who I love so much. So one day when they were in the forest, he said to the charioteer, I have a gift for you. Charioteer was thinking, oh my God, the queen wants to give me a gift. This is the solution to all my financial problems. And she said, here is a fruit. A fruit? Is that all it was? She said, no, no, it's no ordinary fruit. It's a fruit which gives immortality. She said, wow, a fruit which gives immortality. So when he took her back to the kingdom, he was walking away and he had now had this fruit of immortality. And he was thinking, what shall I do? Shall I take it? But there is one in the kingdom, the lady who I see in the evenings when everyone else is asleep, the one that I go to visit, that lady, I will give the fruit of immortality to her. He had another mistress. So that evening he went to the mistress and he said, I have a gift for you. A fruit. She was not expecting that much, but then he said, no, a fruit of immortality. She said, you want to give this to me of all people? He said, I love you. I've given my heart to you. Therefore, I want to give you this fruit of immortality. And so she took it and she went to sleep. And all night she was thinking, what shall I do with this fruit of immortality? And as she was thinking in the night, she thought, I had always in my life I desired someone. But I'm just a poor mistress. How will I ever be able to gain that person's hand? They are so royal. They are so high. They are so wealthy and influential and powerful. I will never be able to approach them. But now I have something which I can offer to this person who otherwise is way out of my league. And I have something that all of that person's wealth cannot buy. So who did she go to? Bhatra Hari. And she turned up the next morning and she said, I must see the king. No, who are you to see the king? What? No, I have something for him that no one can give him. What can you give? You're just some non-entity. No, no, please give me audience with the king. And then she came in front of the king. And the king said, this better be good. What do you have? What do you have to give me? I have everything. And then what did she do? She pulled out the fruit. And he said, a fruit? And then he looked closer and said, a fruit? And he recognized that fruit. He looked at her and he said, I know. I know it's no ordinary fruit. She said, no, no, you don't know. He said, no, no, I know, I know. No, you don't know. This is the fruit of immortality. I gave it to my queen, who I invested all my love into. And she gave it to the charioteer, who she invested all of her love into. And the charioteer gave it to the mistress, who he invested all of his love into. And she came back and gave it to him. And then Bhatra Hari realized, in our lives, we give our hearts to so many things, to so many endeavors, to so many people, to so many achievements that we want to have. We invest everything in that. But what does it come to? Does it come back to us? Is there a reciprocation there? Or do we find that it's just all energy invested, which then just goes somewhere else? And then Bhatra Hari wrote his final satakam, the Vairagya Satakam, the 100 verses of detachment. Because he said, now in this world, I don't want to invest my time, energy, resources in just the temporary things of this world, the temporary love of this world. I want to find the real love which can satisfy my heart, and the real love which can fully give me the happiness that I look for. And in this way, Bhatra Hari wrote his 100 verses of detachment. What am I saying to you today? Am I saying... come and join me. Is that what I'm saying? Not quite. We each have to live our lives. Some of us will be monks. Some of us will be in a family. Some of us will have jobs. Some of us will walk our life in different ways. We all have duties. We all have things we have to do in this world. But what we're trying to share with you today is that while you're going through your life in this world, remember to try and invest your heart, your love, in a place where it will be fully reciprocated with. Try and invest your energy in a place which will give you eternal benefit and not just temporary benefit. Try to work on finding happiness within yourself rather than continually looking for things outside of yourself to fill the vacuum within. This is what life is meant for. The richest person is not the one who has the most. The richest person is the one who needs the least. And therefore, this whole process of spirituality, this whole process of Krishna consciousness, is a process which is aimed at finding real happiness, but an deeper, inner type of happiness. Invest in the inner wealth that's available to each one of us. So, let me perhaps pause here with these few words and this short story and see whether you may have any questions or anything you would like to speak about. And I'll kind of open up the floor a little bit here so it's a little bit more interactive. Is that okay? Yeah. Does anyone have any questions or anything they would like to ask or share? Someone gonna break the ice for us? Otherwise I'll tell another story, but it would be nice to hear from you. Anyone?
When the soul departs from the body, where does the soul go?
When the soul departs from the body, where does the soul go? There was a new restaurant in town. And the name of the restaurant was Karma. And you know what was interesting about this restaurant? There was no menu. You get what you deserve. Where does the soul go in the next life? It all depends on what we do in this life. It all depends on what your desires are. It all depends on where you think you will find happiness. Man proposes, God disposes. So therefore, if we desire certain things at the end of this life, you see, isn't it? Some people have a near-death experience, and what do they say? My whole life flashed before me. So what happens at the time of death is that the things which are most important to you will come to your mind. And according to what comes to your mind, Providence then arranges for another situation in another body where you can fulfill those desires. So if at the end of this life you're desiring, you see, certain things, then Krishna will make an arrangement for your next life in which you can fulfill those desires. But how he fulfills those desires, we don't know. It depends on how much credit we have. Like, I give you an example. If at the end of this life someone desires to live in a big house, I just give up like this. Bigger than this. Imagine at the end of life someone has this desire. I really want to live in a big house. Now, if they have not done many good things in their life, then what will Krishna do? In the next life, maybe they'll be born as the dog of a millionaire living in a mansion. Krishna fulfilled your desire. You wanted to live in a big house. So now become a dog in a mansion. If someone at the end of their life wants to live in a big house, but they've done many good things in this life, they were charitable, they were kind, they helped many people, then in the next life Krishna may say, there you go, a mansion for you. And if someone in this life, at the end of this life, they wanted to live in a big house, but they did some spiritual activity, they tried to at least do something spiritual, then in their next life, they may be born at Bhaktivedanta Manor. What Krishna does is he fulfills your desire according to whatever activities you've done in this life. So this is a science. Some people, they've done past life regressions. Some kids, they can even remember their previous lives. We've been here before. We've done it all before.
In the past life.
But we came back. Because we still had some more things to do on the to-do list. Material desires. So if we have some more material desires, then we have to come back to the material world. Now the problem with the material world is, you're always put into discomfort. Have you noticed? Something always goes wrong. Something is always missing. So therefore, the intelligent person, Krishna says, Yehi samsparsha jaboga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta kohanteya nate shuramate buddha. You become a Buddha, not Buddha. Can't become Buddha. But you can become a Buddha, which means an intelligent person. And what does Krishna say? An intelligent person knows adyantavanta konteya, every material desire, every type of material happiness has a beginning and it has an end. Nateshu ramade Buddha. And therefore one who is intelligent will say, I'm not going to get involved in this. Rather, I'm going to try to look for a happiness in another world, in another way. A happiness which is much deeper than the happiness of the body and mind. That's a wise person. Madness means to keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. So we're actually maddened in this world. We keep trying to find happiness in ways that we know don't make us happy. So we have to think differently. Some thoughts. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Yes. How many lifetimes have we been here?
I don't know.
Lots. Lots. Now we have the opportunity. The thing is...
When you are born,
yes.
I mean, even in this life, you don't remember much of when you are 5 years old or 4 years old or 3 years. So how can you remember your past life? It's not possible.
Yeah, and if we did remember our past life, we would be highly disturbed.
You are right.
Isn't it? If you would remember everything. Imagine just remembering how you passed away in your last life. That would be so painful. So therefore, what does Krishna do at the time of birth? Did you ever see a baby coming out of the womb smiling?
Crying.
Krishna arranges that at the time of birth, the memory is blunt, so that we can live this life in this identity. Because if we remembered everything, we would not be able to function. So we want to be in this world. We want to try and do it. We want to try and enjoy and be happy. So Krishna says, okay, I have to give you a chance then. So this world is a big school. Yeah, we learn many lessons. There are many alarm clocks to wake us up. But the problem is we keep hitting the snooze button. So, yes, everything is there, structured in a certain way. So many lives, we gave our hearts to so many things. So now we should try. Give your heart to Krishna. And if you give your love to Krishna, then you will automatically love everyone and everything else automatically. Make sense? Easier said than done. It's a process. Yeah, Santos. Anyone else would like to ask anything? Make any comments? Wow, everyone is really quiet. Yes, that's all right.
How does one know when they experience self-realization?
Kunal, there. I thought that was a voice from the sky.
How does one know?
How does one know when they are self-realized? It's like saying, how does one know when they're happy? How does one know when they've eaten enough? Do you have a fuel meter on your forehead? You tell your mom, no, look, full. No, full. She can't see, you know. She cannot see. They will try to feed you. I'm warning everyone. They've been preparing 3 days for this piece. Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavitram Vidamutamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartumavyayam. The Sanskrit word Pratyaksha is a very special word. Aksha means to see. Pratyaksha means you see yourself. Spiritual life must be experienced for oneself. No one can put it into you. No one can convince you. No one can do it for you. You have to do it for yourself. On the ground, everyone can help you. But once you're in the air, you have to fly your own plane. So what happens in spiritual life is that, how do you know yourself realized? Yam labdhva cha param labham manyate nadikam tatha. You'll know that you're self-realized because your search for happiness will come to its natural conclusion. You will have found the object of your desires. Now, how many people can say that in this world? How many people can say, I've got nothing more I'm looking for in this world, nothing more to tie up, nothing more to aspire for, nothing more to dream about. I've seen it all, I've done it all, I've got the t-shirt. This world, I'm just kind of riding down my clock here. I know. How many people can say that? The self-realized person can say that. So how will you know you're self-realized? Because there will be a certain santushta satatam yogi yatatma drida nishchaya. There will be a santushta, a complete satisfaction of the heart, that will feel very different to anything and everything you've experienced in this life so far. Are you experiencing it? That's a humble man, that's a good answer. Yeah, you're on the way. And you don't have to reach the destination, you don't have to wait till you reach the destination to know it's working. You experience it even today. You're a different person to who you were 4 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lost a few pounds. Not just in physically, he's a different person, spiritually. I also seen him. Even if you didn't see yourself, we see you. You're changing in a good way. That's what life is meant for. You see, science helps make things work better. Spirituality helps people become better. So that's what this is. It's an opportunity for you to find something.
Do you know, sometimes people have bad habits. They might eat meat, or they drink, or they smoke, for example. When you become more spiritual, do these things cut away, or if it's... Did you know, like, some
habits.
Know, but, yeah.
Put your hand up if you have some bad habits, yeah. You have some bad habits, isn't it?
Shouting.
Shouting, yeah. Anger. At Kunal or? Once a husband and wife came to Srila Prabhupada and they said, "We keep arguing." So you know what Prabhupada said to them? They said, "We keep arguing." So Prabhupada said, "It's okay, you're allowed to argue, but you're not allowed to shout. That's the deal." So they said, "Yeah, okay, fine." He came back 1 week later, they said, "No more arguments." He said, they said, "If you're not allowed to shout, it's no fun." I realized, you tricked them. Yeah, so many habits, not shouting. Habits are difficult to get rid of. Even if you take the H away from habit, still a bit remains. Even if you take the A away, still bit remains. And even if you take the B away, still it remains. Sorry for that cheese. It's not so easy. It's not so easy. Right now, we have a certain inclination. You understand the word inclination? Like when you go in a road, then sometimes the inclination is like this. So it's like going uphill, isn't it? Like when if you walk up the manor to the gate, it's uphill. But then when you come down, it's downhill. Okay, that's obviously. So right now we have a certain inclination. So our habits naturally flow towards the bad. Have you found it's easier to form bad habits than good habits? Do you know that? Right, it's like it's so easy to get addicted to chocolate, but who gets addicted to salad? Have you ever met? Like, "Oh my God, I'm addicted to lettuce." Like, no. Right? Why is it? Why is that? Why do we easily get addicted to all the bad things? Because we have a certain inclination right now. So when the inclination is like this and the water flows, it's all going to go this way, isn't it? So right now, bad habits come very naturally to us. But gradually what happens when you practice spiritual life is your inclination begins to change. And then what happens is good habits come to you naturally. When the alarm goes off, you're kind of thinking like, "Yeah, let's go. I want to wake up early. I don't want to waste these hours." Because naturally your habits flow in a way that's beneficial for you. So over time you will see that habits will change. And you start going from a caterpillar to a butterfly. But there's a little bit of struggle, because have you ever seen a caterpillar coming out of the cocoon? There's some struggle there. But that struggle is there, and then eventually when the cocoon is opened and the butterfly flies. So forming good habits. Bad habits are easy to form, but difficult to live with. Good habits... Sorry, I think I said that. Bad habits are difficult to form, easy to form, but difficult to live with. Good habits, difficult to form, but easy to live with. So you have to be a little determined. When your alarm goes off, you want to wake up every day? Is it? You do, yeah? Was he always like that? Did he always wake up at 4:30 in the morning?
Yeah.
Throughout his whole life?
To come down there.
No, to come down there, before that. In the dark age of his life. Isn't it?
I come home at 4:30 from a nightclub. Oh, okay. When I was younger, it was nightclubs.
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yanisha Sarva Bhutanam Jagrato. Krishna says, what is night for the sage, what is night for all living beings, is the time of awakening for the introspective sage. So that's how, once they ask Srila Prabhupada, what does this mean? He says, the materialists think you're mad, and you think the materialists are mad. Because they look at you and think, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, as you said, most people are going to sleep. So it changes. We change. Different people. It's good to change. Some things, yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj.
See you tomorrow morning. Anyone else? Yes, Sanket.
The story you told, you talked about detachment. And how do we detach?
How do we detach? In the beginning, you're detaching because of frustration. Sour grapes. You tried it all, you think, no, I don't want to do any of this anymore. So the lowest type of detachment is detachment from frustration. Higher than that is detachment which comes out of knowledge. Because you realize, actually being detached from these things is better. It's a better thing for me. And the highest type of detachment comes from taste. When you're so... Vairagya means detachment, isn't it? Vairagya satakam. Vairagya also means vishesha raga. Vishesha means special, raga means attachment. Vairagya means renunciation, detachment, but the double meaning of it is a special type of attachment. Because when you're so connected to the spiritual reality, when you're finding your relationship with the divine, no one needs to come and tell you, okay, let it go. You have no interest anymore. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehina raso varjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. Krishna says, when you experience something higher, all of these things become insignificant. So, in the beginning, we're turning away from the world out of frustration, but it's not a steady platform. Because after some time we think, I got burnt. But let me try again. Maybe next time it will be different. Renunciation from knowledge is a little bit better. But what does Krishna say? What does Bhagavatam say? Vidvamsham apikarshati. Even sometimes, even though you know this is not going to be good for you, still you're drawn to still do it. So the intellect is not even a steady place for detachment. The only steady place for detachment is when we're experiencing a better life. So we must experience a better life. This process is not just about belief. We're not here just to believe in a God. We're not just here to have faith in something spiritual. We are being equipped to experience it here and now. And when you experience it, no one has to convince you that you have to walk away from everything else. It comes naturally. Make sense?